This is a HeadGum Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Tula.
Ooh.
And Greta, did you know that Tula means balance in Sanskrit?
Oh my God, I did not. That's amazing.
You do now. Tula is a breakthrough probiotic skincare line founded by the amazing Dr. Raj, a practicing gastroenterologist and medical wellness expert who used her knowledge of internal health to improve the outer health of the skin.
Gorgeous.
And I was introduced to Tula a few years ago, and I am actually a very big fan of the line. I use their hydrating day and night cream, and it leaves my skin so soft, and I just look like a glamazon after. So I think it's because of the probiotics, right?
Yes.
So the probiotics are natural, good for you bacteria, and one of the top 2017 beauty breakthroughs. And it's shown to help with clearer skin, decreased skin sensitivity, redness, and inflammation.
That's what made me so excited about Tula, because I have patchy red skin sometimes and some inflammation, and I just started using their exfoliating treatment mask, and I love it because my skin just sometimes needs a little revitalization and to feel renewed, and my skin does feel like super moisturized and a lot smoother when I'm done, and I love it. Also, did you know that Tula's products are clinically proven to support your skin's first line of defense, making your skin healthier, more balanced, and more resistant to damage and aging?
From the inside out.
There you go.
I love that. So our beautiful listeners of Lady Lovin, we have a special offer for you today.
Yes, we do.
It's 20% off of your purchase of amazing Tula products.
So to get started trying Tula today, you can get 20% off of your first purchase by visiting Tula.com. That's TULA.com/lovin and enter the promo code lovin, LOVIN at checkout. That is Tula, TULA.com/lovin with the promo code lovin to receive 20% off of your purchase. You are going to love it. I love it. And again, don't forget, 20% off your purchase, Tula.com, TULA.com/lovin, LOVIN, and enter the promo code lovin, LOVIN, at checkout and get your Tula today. Hello, gorgeous listeners, and welcome to another Monday. It is
Or it's a Tuesday, Greta.
Or Tuesday.
Wednesday,
or Wednesday,
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Any day.
But we release our new episodes on Monday, Jill.
True, and we hope you do listen the minute it comes out.
The
but if
second.
You don't, we still respect you.
Yes, exactly. We still do respect
we do.
You.
We do.
Today we have a very exciting... Well, first of all, it's Greta. Hello.
I'm Hi,
joined
Greta.
By, of course, my gorgeous best gals, Jilly Hendricks and Lo Bosworth.
Hello. Hey, everyone.
Wow. Out of a watermelon straw.
I know. It's very, well, it is super. Now it's just summer. It went from like spring to summer in 2.5 seconds.
I don't think spring happened. It was like winter.
Yes,
it
that's
was when,
right.
That is what happens in New York the past like 6 or 7 years. It just goes from winter to summer.
Yeah.
Global warming. Isn't it gorgeous?
Nope. Hot. It's warm. That's what it is.
Too hot. Speaking of too hot,
our guest.
We have a
too hot,
our guest is too hot
guest joining us today. Nice. We have Electra Wiedemann joining us. She is a food writer and editor and author of the very exciting cookbook, Impatient Foodie.
Thank you.
And we're so excited to have you.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yay.
This is my first ever podcast interview. So I can't believe it.
And
this is really exciting.
Amazon, I will say that for the
third
time.
Oh my God. Thank you.
And she was forever a model.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Was a long time ago.
No.
If you're a model once, you're always a model.
That's
thank you.
Once a model, always a model. Yeah.
You have the model aura, like you have great hair, you're really tall.
Well,
thank you.
I love this podcast.
Yeah, well, good. Compliment you the whole time.
The Lady Lovin' podcast. It's so wonderful.
We worship our guests.
Yes,
and
I love this.
That's the whole point.
For sure.
So Electra, I'm looking at your beautiful cookbook that isn't even out yet.
Not out.
When does it come out?
It comes out on June 6th. I'm super excited. So this is a sneak peek what you're holding in your
June
hands
6th.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in the food world and what prompted you to write this book?
Yeah, especially sure. Going from, I guess, from modeling to the food industry, what that was like.
Sure. So there were kind of three random points on the scale that like I didn't connect until recently. The first one was modeling. I grew up eating only pasta.
From an Italian family?
I'm from an Italian family and I was a really picky eater as a kid. So I only ate pasta.
Yum.
And then I started modeling and I obviously couldn't really do that anymore because you have to fit into like tiny sample sizes. So I taught myself how to cook again when I was a young adult starting to model. So that was kind of like point one. And the type of cooking I did was like really healthy, really hearty, but still satisfying and like still enabled me to do like runway and stuff like that. So okay. I kind of slowly taught myself this certain technique of cooking. I had a quarter life crisis when I turned like 23. I call it my quarter life crisis. And I decided the only way I could deal with it was by running away to Africa for a summer.
Wow.
And I went to live in the Samburu Desert in the north of Kenya and volunteered in an elephant reserve camp, living with a tribe, the Samburu tribe. And I was put in charge of this specific camp's food supply and their restaurants. Oh, sorry, their restaurants, their fridge. And that was the first summer that I'd ever like dealt with food supply. Mm-hmm. And it was a small camp. It was like 12 people, but I was totally shocked the amount of food that the camp went through. And like, that was the first time I had the thought like, oh my God, what does a city like New York go through or Beijing or London? It was just kind of like this. My brain had never like understood or really fully absorbed that. So that was point two. And then years later, I went to grad school at the London School of Economics and ended up studying food politics and food systems and writing my dissertation on the future of feeding urban populations. And then I launched Impatient Foodie years later. So it kind of, and the whole, you know, philosophy of Impatient Foodie is like, I really want to participate in the slow food movement, locavorism, seasonal, you know, cooking at home, blah, blah, blah. But I'm also super impatient and I don't really have the time.
Yeah.
So how do I live? My kind of elevator pitch is like, how do I live the Bon Appetit life in BuzzFeed time?
Yeah.
And that's what Impatient Foodie is. And so I launched it.
Me too.
Thank you.
So fun.
I launched it, you know, in 2014 as a side gig because I was still modeling full time. And within 6 months, it became my full time job because people just picked up on it really quickly. And it was a shock to me because I always thought Impatient Foodie would just be my kind of like, when I didn't have modeling work, I would like update the blog, but that's not how it happened. Yeah. So I'm very happy.
So how long would it take someone to like make one of these recipes?
I mean, they take anywhere from 5 minutes to assemble because there are like assembly desserts because I know people don't like baking. And then there's most of them, I'd say, take about 15 minutes to make, 20
that's
minutes.
Awesome.
And then there are some dishes in there that I'm not going to lie are a bit longer. Like I have this chicken bolito, which is basically like a whole chicken that you boil. And it takes about an hour and 15 minutes to make, but it's a dish that pays dividends. So it's something that you can use throughout the week on like salads or in like a sandwich or just on its own. So it's kind of, I have some recipes in there that are like, make this on a Sunday and eat until Thursday type thing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you.
That's how I cook and eat like week to week. Mm-hmm. I pick like 1 or 2 days a week and I make a bunch of stuff. And then I just like eat it throughout the week.
I think that's the best way to do it too.
The refrigerator is always filled with those like round, tall, clear containers, like shop vegetables and meat.
You're one of those like, organized people.
She's so organized.
Yeah. So jealous.
Like, crazy. Yeah. My refrigerator has like a emergency almond milk latte. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those ones in the bottle you get from the deli. And like a bottle of wine and almond butter.
You should be on my show. I do a Facebook live show called Paltry Pantry where I show up to people's houses and I prove that no matter what they have in their pantry, even if it's like salt and I don't know, saffron threads, you could still make something out of it.
Yeah, like me either.
My friend Austin said that last week, and I managed to make an omelet out of the things she had. So you'd be surprised.
You'll be hard-pressed to find eggs in my fridge.
But worst case, you've got a good bar back there, so we could have a nice drink.
I have all of the liquor in the world.
It's sort of like, I feel like Gretchen and I's apartment food-wise is like, come over for a drink and like a spoonful of almond butter.
Yeah. Or like come for drinking a rice cracker if you're lucky.
That was my breakfast this morning. Peanut butter, a spoonful of peanut butter. It's the best way.
Yeah,
I mean, it's delicious. I love peanut butter.
It is a meal on the go.
Yeah, it really is. It is the ultimate impatient foodie meal.
Now even at the bodegas, you can get those little, what's that company?
Justin
or Jason, that like peanut butter,
the
almond butter is a little squeezy thing.
So
they're delicious.
Those are good.
They're delicious. They're a perfect snack. I love it.
I think that like living in any city, especially, and just not even living in a city, just being one person, like living on your own, it's so hard to make meals for yourself and not waste everything.
Yes.
My biggest issue with going to the store and going grocery shopping for myself is like, I love making myself salads, for example. I'm not talking like lame ass salads, like big, exciting, beautiful salads. Mm-hmm. But then if I don't eat all of my groceries in like X amount of time, everything just goes bad. And then I just wasted a shitload of money. And it pisses me off because I'm like, I want to commit to cooking for myself, but
you have to plan.
You should be like me and you have to do your food prep and you have to keep everything separate until you eat and everything will last.
Girl, you want to come over and do my food prep?
There's something scary though about the term food prep.
Well, yeah, I know, but I went to culinary school, so I'm trained to do this. You get all your food.
That's why you got all the dices. You've got probably like a really good dice.
Yeah, like you get technique. All your food. You have like the containers that they use in restaurants and stuff, and like you just like do it all, and then it it's easy.
Where did you go to culinary school?
The
That's
French
so cool.
Culinary Institute. Just
That's
in Soho.
So great.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I have a friend who went there and she loved it. She actually became a private personal chef now. Yeah, it's so great.
I loved it. It was the best experience of my life. It was so cool.
So do you recommend like going to the grocery store on like a Sunday? Do you like have a whole grocery list there that can take
you through
a week?
Yeah, what's your routine?
Or what is
Elytra?
Your routine like in terms of like shopping and all of that?
So I'm a little weird and very lucky because I live in Brooklyn in a neighborhood that has like three really fantastic grocery stores within walking distance of my house.
Where?
Really in Fort Greene, right around the corner from the BAM. Yeah, it's fantastic. So I've kind of developed this a technique where I really only go food shopping like once every other day and I only buy a little bit. So because I don't want to waste the money and the food and my life is kind of all over the place. So I never know if I'm going to be like home for dinner or not.
Right.
So, that really helps me to stay organized and kind of not waste food and money. And then the other thing that I'd like to do is like, I really like to make use of the pre-made food section. For example, I'll buy like a pre-roast chicken, like salad bar stuff. I'll just buy a bunch of stuff that I know I could either eat on its own or eat all together, like roast chicken, quinoa salad, lentils, sauteed greens, and then I get like eggs and feta, and then from that I can make an omelet, a bunch of different meals, a salad, a this or that, and it's going to keep longer because it's already cooked. So that helps me too. But I agree that it's, I think that one of the reasons I started Impatient Foodie was because I felt like the food movement was trying to engage like our generation of women specifically, and trying to get us to go to farmers markets and get excited. And it is kind of fun to go to farmers markets. I think it's a bit of a drag, but like, I'm just being honest about and I think that they don't really understand our lifestyle, not only just like what we want to do, because like everybody's always talking about how spoiled millennials are, and that's not really what it is for me. It's like we all have crazy lives. We all have like at least three different jobs and hustles. Like it's not so easy to like get to the farmer's market in time, or even when it was good for me to get to the farmer's market when I lived in Manhattan, I had a tiny, my refrigerator was like as big as your cupboard. I mean, it was so small. Yeah. So
you had a half fridge.
I couldn't fit anything in there, So I just felt like this whole locavore seasonal movement was something I really wanted to participate in, but it was just like not fitting me.
Yeah.
So that's what Impatient Foodie is about too. It's like trying to find these little techniques where it's like, maybe you're not perfect and nobody is, but at least you're participating in some way.
Well, I think food trends and what we consume has just changed so much. Obviously, I mean, you can, with technology and communication and all of this stuff that has been happening for the past two decades, I guess, everything has just really shifted. So even for us being millennials, and when you hear people in like our parents' generation, for example, say, oh, you guys are so spoiled or whatever, the whole style and way they consume is literally so different.
So different.
Yeah. The complete opposite from the way that we consume things.
Yeah.
And when even like my aunt, for example, cooks these beautiful meals, but it's still this like super traditional like food pyramid type meal, what I mean?
There's like a carb.
Yeah, like a carb and a protein.
And like broccoli.
Exactly. You know? And
nobody eats like that anymore.
It's this like hard pressed, that's just how they were programmed and were programmed in a really different way. And I think that it's interesting to think about the generational differences in how we consume food.
For sure. My mom always says all the food I eat is mush.
Yeah.
Mush?
Yeah.
Mush.
She's like, because I like hummus and I, sorry, moved my mic there, guys, because I got really excited about hummus. But it's like, because I eat like hummus and like lentils and, you know, something else, and I mix them all together. And she's just like, you're just eating a plate of mush. It's
I do lentil hummus mix too.
Yeah.
It's
the best.
Whatever.
Lentils, hummus,
easier.
And brown rice is like my so good. Ideal meal.
I throw like kale on top of that, but that would be a nice, that would be a totally great
kale
meal.
Kale and I delicious. Do not get
or
along.
Or spinach. Spinach.
One time I overdosed on kale.
What does that mean?
I had a kale smoothie, a kale muffin.
Oh my God.
A kale muffin?
Yeah, from Juice Generation.
Oh.
A kale salad.
All and in then, one day?
Like a period of like breakfast and lunch.
Uh-huh.
And then I got super sick.
Yeah.
And couldn't eat anything really for like a week and a half. Had to go to the doctor. Had
this
to
wasn't
get,
that long ago.
2 years.
Did you get
years.
Like food poisoning or was
a
it?
A mini colonoscopy.
Oh my God.
So I was awake during the process.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And it was crazy.
And they said you got like kale overdose.
They were just
they're like you OD'd on kale.
Didn't like really say that I overdosed.
I have never
on
heard
kale.
That before.
They're like, you need like, to stop mainlining kale, Jilly.
Pretty much. They were like, what's happening here? No.
Can you eat kale now though? You don't
so
need a lot of kale
when
anymore.
I eat it, my stomach hurts.
Yeah,
it has
you
to be
might
cooked.
Have,
it's a really, yeah, it's a really
it's
hearty
a tough thing
green.
To digest.
It's very difficult to
it's
digest.
Very
I can't
hard.
Digest
well,
lentils.
If
yeah,
you guys
are
hard too.
Eating the spine of the kale instead of just the leaves, then like the spine is the part that is the really difficult part to digest.
But doesn't the whole thing need to be massaged?
With I do oil and lemon if I'm feeling patient, which is yeah. not often. But that yeah. does help break it down
yeah,
a little
like
bit.
Break it down a little like bit. Like an acid situation in there.
I don't know, guys, but I just avoid it.
Well, you might have. Yeah.
I'm all about mixed greens.
The best, mm-hmm. the best the
lettuce,
kale.
My lettuce of choice.
The best kale I've ever had is when Jill and I's friend Lauren made us that kale at
white beans.
The summer house last summer. It was like very slowly sautéed kale with white beans and garlic and onion.
Yum.
And now it's my most favorite kale dish to make, except it literally takes an hour.
That's
you like stir
delicious.
Your
that's
kale
a patient
for
dish,
an hour.
Not an impatient
that's,
dish.
I know, but I'm a
dish.
Very patient cook.
You are. Love
will I will
spend like 5 hours cooking. I'm like, once I... She put something on her Instagram the other day that was like a whole like rib or like, I don't even know what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, the ribs that take like 12
yeah.
hours.
She's like hilarious. Slow cooking ribs. It was like Wednesday yeah. at like 2 p.m. I'm like, what
do you have a slow cooker
there,
or did you just do it in the oven?
In the oven.
Yeah,
good for you.
Can we talk about slow cookers for a sec? Because people love
people are obsessed.
Things.
I don't have one and I'm feeling like left behind.
I have one. I think that they're medium.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that the flavor gets infused into a slow cooker the same way that it does if you... do something the proper way, like on the stovetop where you like brown your meat and like, you know,
right.
saute it and then like make a sauce. Like, I just feel like the traditional way of slow cooking where you like start on the stovetop and then you end up in the oven is going to create a more delicious meal. But I do understand the benefits of a slow cooker because most people don't have the knowledge or the time to go through the whole process of like,
just toss a bunch of shit in there and
yeah.
you go to work.
So you
and
toss
you come
a bunch
back.
Of shit yeah. in and you come back and it's like typically pretty good. But that's, I've never made something in a slow cooker better than when I do it
yourself.
The real way.
That's right. how we cook on Shabbat in the slow cooker.
Like you cook a brisket?
Or like a stew or just meat in general.
Yeah.
I mean, slow cookers, I feel like are, I mean, I love brisket. It's one of my favorite foods
I
of all time.
Brisket. Oh
and
my
I
God.
Think that brisket in a slow cooker and then you just finish it off in the oven. I don't know. Could you do
yeah.
that?
I did a brisket once. A couple years ago, I dated a Jewish guy, Jeremy, and when we had Passover, were you at that Passover at me and Cassie's old apartment?
I was not.
So I'm not Jewish, but we had Passover for like 30 people, and I cooked for 2 days, and I did literally like a 24-hour brisket. I cooked it
yeah.
for like...
I bet that was
literally
delicious.
I bet you that was so yummy.
That's what on Shabbat. It's like you cook the meat for
yeah.
so long.
I had
delicious.
I had a Texan there who's like into barbecue and he was like, this is the best brisket I've ever had in my life. And I was like, okay, thank you. Take my belt.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Barbecue's my favorite food.
Oh, so good.
Barbecue is delicious.
I also love like steak tips. You know what I mean?
What is a steak tip?
It's like
they're like little triangles. They're sometimes in like salads.
Triangles.
Or like triangles
yeah.
of steak, right?
Yeah, it's like the top of a sirloin or like something like that. And it's just like really like kind of like crispy,
crunchy.
Like crunchy,
yeah.
well done steak. And you dip that in a little Dijon, a little barbecue. You can pop off with the sauce and a steak tip.
Yum.
I guess I haven't had a steak tip in a while.
Neither have I.
I mean, it's interesting because I like went through, I didn't eat meat for over just recently. I just recently started eating meat again.
What brought you back around or back to it?
I mean, I have a restricted diet as it is because of my lupus. I don't have gluten and I don't have dairy.
Right.
Oh. And then I just like to mess around. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I like, just like to get freaky with my diet.
It's crazy, man.
She just needed some animal protein in her life so she could stand up.
Yeah. So then I, for me, I was like, okay, I'm going to try. I don't eat that much meat as it is. So I'm just going to try and like cut it out. That being said, when I stopped eating meat, I was at a point where I was consuming chicken like every fucking day.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I should be eating like a full bird every day.
Can I tell you, I don't fuck with chicken.
Yeah, really? You haven't fucked with chicken for a long time.
I do fish or meat.
You can't. You just don't like chicken?
I don't like it.
Interesting.
I never liked the way that I don't really cook. Maybe if I cooked myself, I'd like it. I don't know. Chicken. But I never like it anywhere I go.
You don't even like chicken dumplings? I guess there isn't really chicken dumplings.
I eat kosher now, only kosher meat. So it's like I have less options of chicken, but I just don't ever really like it.
Interesting.
Have you ever eaten cat?
I have never eaten cat. Have you?
Like no. House
cat?
Cat. Yes, like cat.
No.
I never knew people actually ate cat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of people eat cat in other countries, just like how people eat dog and horse in a bunch of other countries. It just depends on.
I have eaten horse when I was in Italy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
I didn't know I was eating it though. Disclaimer.
That's usually how it happens.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I didn't like it that much.
You a horse and not tell you.
I think it was because I think
language barrier.
Yeah, language barrier. And I was just kind of being polite, like I was just eating things, and then it came up later that it was a cavallo.
Yeah, she thought it was an elk. Okay. Like, whatever. Yeah, I also think a lot of people would get really freaked out if they found out you're a tourist, and they probably didn't want you to think that they were like fucking Satan. They're not going to be like, "Hey, cute American girl, want to bob?" Bear, I can't bite.
I ate it because it looked like air dried beef. Could it be that Brazaola is occasionally horse meat? And I thought it was air dried beef, and it was not. It tasted very different.
Was
and
it good?
Like
it.
No, I actually didn't like it, so I didn't even eat that much of it. But I did eat it, so I felt horrible.
You know, I imagine a horse probably doesn't taste very good because it uses its muscles so often.
Yeah, it's like kind of gamey.
Yeah, like a delicious piece. Like when you eat a delicious steak, it's from the part of a cow that is not being used very often. It's typically like a fillet is like very far away from its like legs.
Right.
Yeah. And so the closer you get to an animal's body parts that like move and get them around, like the tougher the meat will be because it's like muscly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for a horse that's made of pure muscle, I don't think that would be very good to eat.
I didn't enjoy it.
You'd have to put the horse in the slow cooker.
Yeah. Oh my God.
this is like a trigger warning on this podcast right now.
We don't eat horse here.
My boyfriend lived in Ghana for a few months. Wow. And while he was there, they eat a lot of goat, I guess. Yeah. And he was saying that the meat, like you're saying, these goats are just like running all over the place are not tender at all. And the meat is really, really bad. And
skinny little goats.
And after a while, he was like, the meat's just very unedible because these goats are just very lean and in shape.
It's a very pungent meat, too.
Like, so I guess, like, if we get into some sort of situation.
Some, like, cannibal situation where we all need to eat each other.
Yeah, just we know who to pick.
I do think about that sometimes. Zombie apocalypses. I'm like, what would I do? Let's not get started on that. I think about it all the time. It's like one of my biggest fears.
Really? Is it zombie apocalypse?
I think about it a lot.
See, that's not my biggest fear, but you remember when all those people were taking bath salts and like eating each other?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh God.
What was that about?
Yeah.
I mean, you just
that was just
so,
like a drug phenomenon.
What was that about? You just got so fucked up that you just like ate your homie. I don't know.
That is crazy. I could never imagine being like that fucked up and being like, oh, I guess I'll just eat this person.
It's crazy.
I think that this is a great time for a word from our advertiser.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be thrilled about this intro.
We will be right back.
And we are back. And Lo, you wanted to continue talking about the zombie apocalypse.
A little bit, because I also think about the apocalypse all the time.
Good. I'm not alone then.
No, not a zombie apocalypse, but I'm convinced that the world is going to end in our lifetime. We're going extinct. motherfuckers.
I guess it's not so much zombie apocalypse as what was that movie that was based on that book where, like, you know, it's like the world, it kind of ends. There's like some nuclear event or something like that.
Cannibal Holocaust?
No, it's it was based on a famous book. The Road. The Road. Oh, Did you guys ever watch that movie?
Yes. With what's his face? Viggo Mortensen.
It was Viggo Mortensen. Yeah, I think so.
Viggo, I love
That's
him
what
so
I think
much.
About all the time.
I just think that with the environment and the shape that it's in and the potential for, like, nuclear war and or the spread of an unstoppable virus, I think that we might not all die, but I think that there could be, like, a mass extinction event of humans in our lifetime or our children's lifetime.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think
I was talking about
this is getting dark.
About this with my family the other day, and they all agree. And maybe it's just because Donald Trump's president, so everything feels like the apocalypse, but I think it's totally possible.
I think that a lot of things are possible. I also think it's possible that maybe he gets impeached and then maybe a bunch of people lose their jobs and go to jail. And then maybe new climate change initiatives get put into place. And then maybe we save the earth.
Yeah, maybe it's the opposite of what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I hope
so, too. I have deep hopes for everything that you're saying.
I do understand the lingering fear.
But also deep fears.
Well, I mean, hello, I'm not going to lie. Going outside right now, it's fucking 90 degrees outside. And the fact that we're still arguing with people that climate change is real is fucking insane.
On the plus side, I think that they're embroiled in so much controversy now with the special prosecutor counsel being appointed that I don't know if they're going to pull out of the Paris Climate Pact. I mean, that was on the table for a while, and you don't hear anybody talking about it anymore.
And I think from an economic perspective, there are so many new businesses with, like, natural energy as a priority that we're really not going back to, like, coal energy and, like, we're
just
too
not
far
sustainable.
We're just too far along into these, like, new energy initiatives to go back.
Also, absolutely. Our infrastructure isn't built to, like, use coal energy, to use burning energy.
Can you imagine if whoever discovered that the sun can create energy just happened to, like, come before these other sorts? Like, how different the world would be today?
So different.
It would be remarkably different.
Before we move on to sex exploring,
which, you guys, I actually found a great list. And I know that people love my list.
Great. I love a list.
Jill, I love your list.
I know.
Love your lists are so climactic and anticlimactic.
I know,
all
at the same time. So that will lead us when we get there, guys. So stay tuned for the list.
I just really wanted to touch upon, I think it's so incredibly interesting that you got your master's
in
food economics. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to know a little bit more about, like, what that was like studying that and what you, I don't know, with, like, in urban areas.
Yeah, what'd you learn about?
Sure.
So it wasn't in food economics. I actually went to get a master's of science in biomedicine, which is so random. It's a complicated story of why I decided to do that. I was modeling for a really long time and things were going really well. My mom was also a model for a long time and she kind of hit. The reality of the industry is, like, you hit a certain age and it's just, like, kind of over for you, right? And I wasn't close to that yet, but I kind of always had this, like, feeling that there was just this, like, end day approaching and I didn't want to be in a position where I was, you know, not, like, in a position to get a great job. So I decided to go back to grad school and I was always really interested in science, but I'm really bad at science and I'm really bad at chemistry and math and stuff. And I found this program out of the London School of Economics that was a master's of science out of the sociology department, which I thought was super interesting. And it basically talked about the ways that science affects society and the way science is also kind of a culture. They kind of present themselves as, you know, impervial to whatever, but they're not. And kind of looking at all the ways that science interacts with society and culture and politics and blah, blah, blah. And then I ended up studying that and taking classes in environmental politics and cultural theory just because I heard it was a cool course.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And in order to graduate from the LSE, you have to write a dissertation that touches upon every single class that you took.
Interesting.
And so it took me about 6 months to figure it out. But one day I was sitting eating my oatmeal literally in the morning and I was just like, politics, environment, health, and culture. What the fuck am I going to write about? And then I, like, looked down and I was like, food, I can write about food. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I kind of, like, slowly, you know, chipped away and put together my topic for dissertation, which then I wrote about food technology and food systems and stuff like that. So it wasn't intentional. I didn't go in being like, I'm a food person and I'm going to do this. I literally went to school because I was like, I have to be in a good position to get a great job at some point. I also had a boyfriend at the time, full disclosure, who told me that I would never get in.
Ew, this is like a L. Woods situation. Yeah.
And so I applied just to be like, fuck yourself. And I got in. And so I went and I like broke up with him. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Blowing up.
Just a little phone call action over here.
Bring, okay. Bring. I do like that noise.
Sorry about that.
I never get to hear a droid.
You know, and we had broken up in the, I'm just trying to turn this off. We had broken up in the meantime, but I decided to just stick with it. And I'm really glad that I did because it really changed my life.
That's fab.
I love that. Wait, I also love that story of some fucking guy you were dating being like, you're not going to get in. And then you applied and you're like, watch me.
He kind of challenged me and was just kind of, yeah, like very doubtful that I would.
He was a douchebog.
Yeah. He made me feel a little bad about myself, but you know, I'm glad he did because I wouldn't have pushed myself otherwise. I mean, you know, I probably could have been a kinder person, but I'm glad that he did that because now I'm in a different position than I would but otherwise. So
true.
There you go.
And then he's going to see your book on shelves and be like, oh,
be like,
fuck.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Honestly,
oh man.
For anyone out there that says, don't be charged by revenge, be charged by revenge.
I agree.
It feels so good.
I remember when Anne Hathaway had that like weird boyfriend situation.
Oh, yeah. Where he was like, he went to jail or something I don't even remember.
Yeah. That was so long ago. Yeah. But I remember she showed up on the cover of W Magazine looking so good. And the headline was Chic is the best revenge. And I was like, yes.
It's true.
You were like, I'm inspired.
Exactly.
I was like, absolutely.
Go Anne.
Well, I think this leads us to our sexploration, guys. And I'm really excited.
Jill's busting out her list
to
right
share
now.
This list.
Oh my God,
everyone.
Wait, is this a Refinery thing?
It is.
I worked at Refinery for a while.
It's the Power of Pleasure. It's 9 foods you should add to your sex life.
Meaning what? To like get you horny? Really?
So.
Wait, to like get you horny or what?
Can I just say,
don't put anything on your vagina because you will get an infection.
First off, some kind.
True.
It says, integrating food into your sex life is an easy peasy way to try new things in bed.
Hmm.
So, basically, the first one they said are popsicles.
Okay.
And
sugar
said,
free.
Popsicles look like penises.
Yes.
Naturally.
Ooh, approved of this article.
Yeah. Okay.
So what do they want you to do with it?
They don't want you to do anything with it near your private vagina parts because it can throw off the pH balance. But they said to show off your blowjob skills.
Okay, so you suck the popsicle like a little wiener.
I guess.
Okay.
Next.
Okay. Next, brie and crackers.
What?
That's disgusting.
Girl, no, you better, first of all, crackers in the bedroom, the crumbs, forget about it. And then a stinky cheese.
Okay.
Agreed.
But technically eat brie and crackers off of someone's body.
Ew. Oh.
No.
Or
no.
Eat them after you hook up.
Okay. Next.
Next.
A cheese plate in bed is pretty much the classiest and most delicious palate cleanser.
Disagree.
You can have.
I'm not sure about
strongly
that.
Strongly disagree.
Okay. Grapes.
Okay, I get that.
Maybe. Like, breakfast in bed, they say.
Yeah, but again,
this is about boning.
You guys,
I know.
The list that I give are climactic.
Also, here's the thing. I don't want to eat in bed.
Cucumber.
Cucumber to do what?
It says you can turn the salad ingredient into a dildo.
You can.
Why can't you just use a dildo, though?
That, you guys?
That's a huge dildo.
What if it breaks?
You could use a Persian cucumber.
Well, you're supposed to put condoms over things that you insert into your body.
So use a sustained condom and pop it on over a cuke.
And then put it in your butt.
But what if the cucumber has some sort of like pesticide thing on it?
Well, you wash it.
What if you're not washing it right?
Well, then you're not fucking
it right.
Oh,
yeah. They say still use a condom over it. Okay, whipped cream. That's obviously, we all know that.
No, never doing whipped cream. One of my camp counselors had a nipple piercing and her boyfriend put whipped cream on her boob and then it got infected. And then
she told us this
horny story. I was like 12 years old and I thought it was super hot and she was explaining it to us and then her nipple was super infected. And I was like, this is gross.
Never mind.
Awful.
Oh, my God. Grapefruit.
What? Oh yeah, blowjobs with grapefruit.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait. What?
Have you guys never seen the blowjob grapefruit?
This, okay. I can't.
I have no idea.
There's a very famous woman who is on YouTube, who is famous for her grapefruit blowjobs. And what you do is you cut a grapefruit in half, and then you cut the, like, you cut the top and the bottom of the grapefruit a little, you know what I'm saying? So you can go through it.
Yeah, so it's like a circle.
Yeah. And then you carve out a little area in the center of the grapefruit so that your man's wiener can fit in there. Hopefully you need to carve it out, otherwise he has a skinny little wiener. Then you hold the grapefruit and you put it over his dong, and then you suck his dick and you use the grapefruit as your hand. Does that make sense? You're like jerking him off.
But is it supposed to be like good for you? Because it, like, the smell, it tastes like grapefruit then? I don't really understand. Say,
well, this woman who I need to Google her, this woman who became famous for
Blow is not amused.
Actually, if you guys they have a little like abrasion, not an STD,
and
on their wiener,
and hurts
that
them.
Acid, like, that's not. Or what if the acid gets in their little wiener hole?
We're
that's
hoping.
Not cool. Oh, that is not
why
okay.
Why keep calling them little?
Yeah,
the guy, very large wiener holes,
very large wangs.
Okay.
Anyway, so here's the deal. If you guys are interested this. In this grapefruit blowjob, go online, because there's a very famous woman who does them, and she also makes this crazy sound. She calls it like a hurricane tongue or something like that. It's insane.
Wow.
And Vice, Munchies for Vice, actually did a whole thing covering her.
Interesting.
Blowjobs.
Okay, spaghetti.
No,
hard I love
no.
a spaghetti, but maybe not with sex. I mean, I also feel like brie and crackers and spaghetti
like,
are things you
partner.
Like, run it
they get full.
Body?
It says surprise your partner by making a home cooked meal of spaghetti.
What?
Because your home will be flooded with rich aromas of garlic butter and tomato sauce. And basically, it says you can try sexy spaghetti using Lady and the Tramp style. Enjoy a spaghetti kiss.
Can I
Here's
say something?
The deal. Yes.
Whoever
yes. Please.
Funny really spaghetti story. I have a funny spaghetti story.
Where?
Do you want to tell your funny sex or spaghetti story first?
Sure.
Okay.
Basically, so I like was dating this guy that I like really loved. So whatever that was. But he once made me spaghetti, and then we like made out after, and he was like, "I love kissing you and tasting like the garlic from the food that I cooked for you."
You're like, okay.
And that's my spaghetti story.
Anticlimactic.
No, I think that that's sweet.
Yeah, so I guess like my sexy
were you
spaghetti
horny,
story?
Though,
no, it was
that?
More of like a romantic thing.
And
this wasn't a sex story.
I'm
this
so
was more
full
of a romance.
Spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly. Brie crackers and spaghetti is like,
well,
whoa,
okay,
yeah,
so we'd gone to the gym.
I'm like, I need 4 hours before we fuck now. Yeah,
totally.
No, we'd gone to the gym. And
so
then,
you were ready to carb up.
And then he cooked for me. And then we like made out.
That's but then nice. Did you guys bone?
You know, Greta, I don't really like to talk about my details of my sexual
bowed.
Life.
Were you full? Or did you eat like a delicate plate?
I ate a delicate plate.
Full of okay. dicks.
But it was just funny.
Cool.
Julie,
that's
a nice
romantic
story.
Spaghetti
I think that's a
story.
Romantic spaghetti story. Because I think a lot of girls feel really self-conscious being like, I can't kiss dudes with garlic breath. Turns out, if the guy made the garlic,
they're turned on
they're
by
turned
it.
On.
He was like
there
turned on to the fact that he'd like cooked me food and I tasted like the food that he'd cooked
he
with his hands.
Nourished you. Wow.
Yeah, he's very passionate, wow. This man.
Okay, what
Electra,
what, are your
what were you going to
know? I was going to
say, might be more interested in your story.
I don't know how to like, so like basically my 20s sex life, which is like when I basically really started having sex, to be totally honest, it took me years to like disassociate the sex I was seeing on movie screens and TV shows and reading about in articles from like sex as it really is.
Right.
And it was kind of made sex feel really disappointing for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I find, even though I love Refinery 29 and worked there for a long time, I find articles like this to be like a little bit like they kind of trick young women who maybe haven't had sex into thinking that there are going to be all these like certain experiences and expectations when in fact, like, it usually doesn't happen
yeah,
like that.
You don't bring food into your sex
yeah,
life.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, the grapefruit thing. I'm sure if this lady's like an expert, she's great at it. But for most people, it would just be like messy and awkward. You know
and
what
also,
I mean?
Like,
I just
sticky,
wanted to say
sticky.
That like yeah. that is an I think that is an unfair. I mean, maybe it's not unfair just on women, but it's just kind of like our generation in general. I think guys have this, too. I actually read this article recently that was saying that like this generation is particularly sex complex because of all the sex images, and guys, like, especially with porn that they're watching from a young age, is like changing all of their expectations around sex. And it makes me sad because, like, now as a 33-year-old woman, I have a way healthier relationship with sex, but it took me a long time to be like, wait, it's not like this, like, Disney sex, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, not Disney has sex, but, you know, like, that kind of glorified, glamorized version.
Well, it's like every time anyone has sex in a movie, they always both have an orgasm.
Oh, my God. Immediately.
I'm just like, what is this?
And, like, immediately.
This is not real life.
Yeah. You know, and just, and also kind of, yeah, like, and there are a lot of things that are really beautiful and fun about sex that films don't capture, that if you just kind of, like, let it be, you would be able to, I don't know. This is, like, just my opinion, but that was, like, that was a big gripe.
Do you want to know why? Because they don't make it, like, raw and real, because that makes people uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And I think for me, like, something that I still get bummed out about is, like, if I'm watching a show and, like, some person will, like, walk in the door and then they really passionately start hooking up and they're, like, taking their clothes off really ferociously and frantically. I'm like, never in my life have I done that. Never in my life have I just, like, opened the door to someone and they just come in and started, like, ripping my clothes off like, fucking, like, throwing me everywhere. That's never happened for me. And I know it happens and it's
doesn't happen often, but it's happened and it's fun.
But there's sometimes, like,
Are you talking about that you didn't have, like, a greeting? You just walked in and started hooking up?
Yeah, like, you know how that happens in
some... So you didn't say, like, oh, hey, how are you?
No, they just open the door and they just immediately are, like, magnets and they start getting freaky everywhere.
I think usually I always greet.
And then go into...
Hello.
Hey, nice to see you. But I will say, like, for me, like, with, like, the pressure that you're talking about, how it's, like, this, like, unrealistic thing, I think for me sometimes I'm, like... Wait, have I ever been in a passionate relationship? Like,
because that's what you're watching.
Right.
Yeah,
sometimes I'm just watching all this shit and I'm like, oh, like, I guess no one has ever thought that I was that hot that they wanted to, like, come in.
Do you know what's odd for me is, like, all these, like, porn websites, most popular porns are, like, stepbrother, like, or me and my stepmom, or, like, it's, like, all related. I'm just
that's so
why
weird.
Are people watching these, like, related themed sex
porn? Oh my God. Did you guys see that thing a few weeks ago where a professor sent out an email with, like, the assignment, but he copy and pasted the porn he was watching and he put it, like, and blasted it out to his whole class?
What?
Embarrassing. And it was, like, it was kind of like barely legal porn, which is, like, super embarrassing.
I don't understand that.
That was pretty brutal.
Teacher.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
Sad. I hope he doesn't get fired.
I know.
Yeah,
that seems like an accident.
That was
so
bad.
That's a big boo-boo.
That's a big, big boo-boo.
Well, this has been such a lovely chat.
It has.
I'm so happy that you were able to join us today.
I was there. Thank you all for having me. You're wonderful, lovely ladies.
Everybody, go and get Electra's book on June 6th.
Yes, please.
It's in bookstores, online. Where can
it's online,
it?
And it's also going to be all over. Yeah, in bookstores and stuff like that.
Awesome. The photos are amazing.
The
super
photos
fun.
Are bomb.
Thank you.
They're so modern. At. I love them.
I wanted people to want to lick the pages. Yes.
And this is just all these spaghetti squash, vegan bolognese. Sign me up. Butternut squash toast. I'm there. Radish chip with crudite. Thank you. Like, I just want all of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looks real good.
It is. I hope you all enjoy it. And thank you again.
Yeah.
Of course. Where can our listeners? Oh, wait. Actually.
Wait,
our most important thing.
This is the first time we've almost forgotten to do a lady lovin'. Oh my God.
So my current lady lovin' is somebody who I admire hugely, who did a fantastic job. I mean, just a week ago, but it feels like an eon ago because of the news cycle these days. Sally motherfucking Yates.
Yes, Sally Yates.
Slade.
Shout out to Sally.
The Congress. Yes. And I especially loved it when she took down Ted Cruz, who I personally have a very large distaste for.
Oh,
and I just thought she was so beautiful and smart and calm and so gracious while she was shooting people down. And it just made me feel like, I love you, Sally Yates. I want to be like you when I grow up. So she's my new icon.
Great, great shout out. Sally, thank you. We love you.
Sally, you're the best.
Shout out to Sally.
Please run for governor.
Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me at my handle on Instagram is @impatientfoodie, impatientfoodie.com. And I also have Impatient Foodie on Facebook.
Amazing. Great. And you can watch a little video of this.
Yes.
On your Facebook page.
Yes. We have filmed it so we can have us all chatting and it will be a great preview for the whole podcast to come.
Amazing.
Oh, also, one more thing. I just wanted to thank all of the Lady Lovin' fans that came to my show at the Jane a few weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
It was so cool having you guys there. Also, my gorgeous listener from Mexico came all the way to my show last
night.
Amazing.
That's incredible. Congratulations.
Husband. She's expecting a baby. So very exciting. And just thank you guys for coming.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.